William Bradford. One of history's great treasures is the journal of William Bradford, who came to America on the Mayflower and served as Plymouth's governor for many years. He takes us up close and personal to what was going on in their minds and the trials they went through in establishing themselves in a new land. He starts by telling us how they wanted to live by simplicity of the gospel without the mixture of man's inventions, that it cost them something this ensuing history will declare. They could not long continue in any peaceable condition, but were hunted and persecuted on every side, so as their former afflictions were but as flea-bitings in comparison of these which came upon them. For some were taken and clapped up in prison, others had their houses beset and watched night and day, and hardly escaped their hands, and the most were fain to flee their houses and habitations and the means of their livelihood. Yet seeing themselves thus molested, and that there was no hope of their continuance there, by a joint consent they resolved to go into the Low Countries, where they heard was freedom of religion for all men. 1608. Being thus constrained to leave their native soil and country, their lands and livings, and all their friends and familiar acquaintance, it was much, and thought marvelous by many. But to go into a country they knew not but by hearsay, where they must learn a new language and get their livings they knew not how, it being a dear place and subject to the miseries of war, it was by many thought an adventure almost desperate, a case intolerable, and a misery worse than death. But these things did not dismay them, though they did sometimes trouble them, for their desires were set on the ways of God, and to enjoy His ordinances. But they rested on His providence, and knew whom they had believed. Yet this was not all, for though they could not stay, yet were they not suffered to go, but the ports and havens were shut against them. So as they were fain to seek secret means of conveyance, and to bribe and fee the mariners, and give extraordinary rates for their passages. And yet were they oftentimes betrayed, many of them, and both they and their goods intercepted and surprised, and thereby put to great trouble and charge, of which I will give an instance of two, and omit the rest. There was a large company of them proposed to get passage at Boston and Lincolnshire, and for that end had hired a ship wholly to themselves, and made agreement with the master to be ready at a certain day, and take them and their goods in at a convenient place, where they accordingly would all attend in readiness. So after long waiting and large expenses, though he kept not day with them, yet he came at length and took them in the night. But when he had them and their goods abroad, he betrayed them, having beforehand complotted with the searchers and other officers to do, who took them and put them into open boats, and there rifled and ransacked them, searching to their shirts for money, yea, even the women, further than became modesty, and then carried them back into the town and made them a spectacle and wonder to the multitude, which came flocking on all sides to behold them. Being thus first by these catchpole officers rifled and stripped of their money, books, and much other goods, they were presented to the magistrates, and messengers sent to inform the lords of the council of them, and so they were committed to ward. Indeed, the magistrates used them courteously and showed them what favor they could, but could not deliver them till order came from the council table. But the issue was that after a month's imprisonment, the greatest part were dismissed and sent to the places from whence they came, but seven of the principal were still kept in prison and bound over. The next spring after, there was another attempt made by some of these and others to get over to another place, and it so fell out that they lighted of a Dutchman at Hull, having a ship of his own belonging to Zealand. They made agreement with him and acquainted him with their conditions, hoping to find more faithfulness in him than in the former of their own nation. He bade them not fear, for he would do well enough. He was by appointment to take them in between Grimsby and Hull, where was a large common a good way distant from any town. Now against the prefixed time, the women and children with the goods were sent to the place in a small bark which they had hired for that end. and the men were to meet them by land. But it so fell out that there was a day before the ship came, and the sea being rough and the women very sick, prevailed with the seamen to put into a creek hard by where they lay on ground at low water. The next morning the ship came, but they were fast and could not stir until about noon. In the meantime, the shipmaster, perceiving how the matter was, sent his boat to be getting the men aboard whom he saw ready, walking about the shore. But after the first boat full was got aboard and she was ready to go for more, the master espied a great company, both horse and foot, with bills and guns and other weapons, for the country was raised to take them. The Dutchman, seeing that, swore his country's oath sacrament, and having the wind fair, weighed his anchor, hoisted sails, and away. But the poor men which were got aboard were in great distress for their wives and children, which they saw thus to be taken, and were left destitute of their helps, and themselves also, not having a cloth to shift with them, more than they had on their backs, and some scarce a penny about them, all they had being aboard the bark. It drew tears from their eyes, and anything they had they would have given to have been ashore again. But all in vain, there was no remedy. They must thus sadly part. And afterward endured a fearful storm at sea, being 14 days or more before they arrived at their port, in 7 whereof they never saw sun, moon, nor stars, and were driven near the coast of Norway, the mariners themselves often despairing of life, and once with shrieks and cries gave over all, as if the ship had been foundered in the sea and they were sinking without recovery. But when man's hope and help wholly failed, the Lord's power and mercy appeared in their recovery, for the ship rose again and gave the mariners courage again to manage her. And if modesty would suffer me, I might declare with what fervent prayers they cried unto the Lord in this great distress, especially some of them, even without any great distraction. When the water ran into their mouths and ears, and the mariners cried out, "We sink! We sink!" they cried it not with miraculous, yet with a great height or degree of divine faith, "Yet, Lord, Thou canst save! Yet, Lord, Thou canst save!" with such other expressions as I will forbear, upon which the ship did not only recover, but shortly after the violence of the storm began to abate, and the Lord filled their afflicted minds with such comforts as everyone cannot understand, and in the end brought them to their desired haven, where the people came flocking, admiring their deliverance, the storm having been so long and sore, in which much hurt had been done, as the master's friends related unto him in their congratulations. But to return to the others where we left, the rest of the men that were in greatest danger made shift to escape away before the troop could surprise them, those only staying that best might be assistant unto the women. But pitiful it was to see the heavy case of these poor women in this distress, what weeping and crying on every side, some for their husbands that were carried away in the ship, as before related, others not knowing what would become of them and their little ones, others again melted in tears, seeing their poor little ones hanging about them, crying for fear and quaking with cold. Being thus apprehended, they were hurried from one place to another, and from one justice to another, till in the end they knew not what to do with them. For to imprison so many women and innocent children for no other cause, many of them, but that they must go with their husbands, seemed to be unreasonable, and all would cry out of them. And to send them home again was difficult, for they alleged, as the truth was, they had no homes to go to, for they had either sold or otherwise disposed of their house and livings. To be short, after they had been thus turmoiled a good while and conveyed from one constable to another, they were glad to be rid of them in the end upon any terms, for all were wearied and tired of them. Though in the meantime they, poor souls, endured misery enough, and thus in the end necessity forced a way for them. But that I be not tedious in these things, I will omit the rest, though I might relate many other notable passages and troubles which they endured and underwent in their wanderings and travels both at land and sea, but I haste to other things. Yet I may not omit the fruit that came hereby, for by these so public troubles in so many eminent places, their cause became famous and occasioned many to look into the same, and their godly carriage and Christian behavior was such as left a deep impression in the minds of many. And though some few shrunk at these first conflicts and sharp beginnings, as it was no marvel, yet many more came on with fresh courage and greatly animated others. And in the end, notwithstanding all these storms of opposition, they all got over at length, some at one time and some at another, and some in one place and some in another, and met together again according to their desires, with no small rejoicing. This band of pilgrims lived in Holland for about 12 years, and then, for various reasons, felt the necessity of leaving and traveling to the New World. Bradford continues, "Lastly, and which was not least, a great hope and inward zeal they had of laying some good foundation, or at least to make some way thereunto, for the propagating and advancing the gospel of the kingdom of Christ in those remote parts of the world, yea, though they should be but even as stepping stones unto others for performing of so great a work." They faced insurmountable obstacles, but it was answered that all great and honorable actions are accompanied with great difficulties, and must be both enterprised and overcome with answerable courages, and all of them, through the help of God, by fortitude and patience, might either be borne or overcome. Their ends were good and honorable, their calling lawful and urgent, and therefore they might expect the blessing of God in their proceeding. Yea, though they should lose their lives in these actions, yet they have comfort in the same, and their endeavors would be honorable. Now let us join them at their moment of departure from Holland. Bradford writes that the night before the departure, the night was spent with little sleep by the most, but with friendly entertainment in Christian discourse and other real expressions of true Christian love. The next day, the wind being fair, they went aboard and their friends with them, where truly doleful was the sight of that sad and mournful parting, to see what sighs and sobs and prayers did sound amongst them, what tears did gush from every eye, and pithy speeches pierced each heart. But the tide, which stays for no man, calling them away, they were thus loath to depart, their reverend pastor falling down on his knees, and they all with him, and with watery cheeks commended them with most fervent prayers to the Lord and his blessing. And then, with mutual embraces and many tears, they took their leaves one of another, which proved to be the last leave to many of them. Bradford and his wife, Dorothy, decided it best to leave their little 5-year-old son behind until they got established. Dorothy would never see him again, as she somehow fell off the boat and drowned while it was anchored in Plymouth Harbor. Nearly half of the Mayflower's 102 passengers did not live to see the next spring. While most of the 39 children survived that first winter, all but 4 of the mothers died. Yet when the captain of the Mayflower offered to take any of them back to England who wished to go, not one of them went. Some 23 years later, Bradford wrote, "I cannot but here take occasion not only to mention, but greatly to admire, the marvelous providence of God, that notwithstanding the many changes and hardships that these people went through, and the many enemies they had and difficulties they met withal, that so many of them should live to a very old age. What was it that upheld them? It was God's visitation that preserved their spirits. God, it seems, would have all men to behold and observe such mercies and works of his providence as these are towards his people, that they, in like cases, might be encouraged to depend upon God in their trials, and also to bless his name when they see his goodness towards others. Thus, out of small beginnings, greater things have been produced by his hand that made all things of nothing, and gives being to all things that are, and as one small candle may light a thousand, so the light here kindled hath shone unto many, yea, in some sort to our whole nation. Let the glorious name of Jehovah have all the praise.